Rich Kimble here. Kerry Haskell, who went to Fenway yesterday, and because deep down he's still a Yankees guy, managed to tease Red Sox fans, but end up going into the All-Star break with yet another loss. Four of their last five, but Chad Finn of the Boston Globe joins us to tell us, as he did in preseason, there's plenty of reason to be excited about this team going into the second half.
I don't know, Rich. 4 out of 5 losses is probably over.
Could be in deep trouble here. No, the break's coming at the right time, though.
The look overall, man, it's been great. First of all, they're fun to watch. They're an enjoyable team. And here they are sitting in first place. And I'm even you, as optimistic as you were, I don't think would have quite expected first place at the All-Star break, would you?
No, I thought 84 wins was the high end, 85 wins. Really interesting September where they're on the fringe of the wild card race. Probably don't get in, but you're feeling pretty good about this quote-unquote bridge year. And yeah, that I did think Bloom would find some really good value. Some of these guys that he shuffled onto the roster. Christian Arroyo last year was a late pickup, and then the Pivetta deal was already clearly a win last season just based on how Embry and Brandon Workman pitched for the Phillies. And didn't last beyond last year with them. The guys they brought in this year to figure Kike Hernandez or maybe Hunter Renfrow or a couple of them would pan out, but for the most part, almost all of them have, other than maybe Marwin Gonzalez, who at least was a versatile defensive player, and he's hit on a lot of things. They've had a lot go their way for sure. But to me, Rich, it kind of feels like a combination of the 13 season and the 18 season. The 18 season is feeling like they're going to win every night when they go out there, even with this little rut they've been in. It feels like no matter who's on the mound, that they're going to hit enough to have a chance to win every game. And it feels like 13, as we've talked about before, in the fact that Boone just brought in a bunch of veteran players who really gelled into a team quickly. They're guys who have good reputations around the game and maybe weren't coming off their best seasons, but got them at the right time and found a little bit of magic there. So we're seeing kind of a combination of two really incredibly memorable Red Sox seasons so far.
Yeah, and yesterday, from my perspective, was a good example. Even when they fell behind early, I hung in there, and it was a beautiful day, but I kept checking back into the house to see what was going on, and I'd listen to the radio outside, and then they'd get people on base. I'd go back in to watch it all happen, and I believed even into the ninth that they were going to find a way, even though, what was this guy's name, Ranger Suarez, that looked like Raleigh Fingers out there yesterday?
Yeah, well, the sub 1.0 ERA this year. That Phillies team reminds me of a more disappointing Red Sox team where they have some really high-end talent. And the secondary guys, the back end of the roster, middle to the back end of the roster, just isn't getting the job done. And you look at the name from their team and say, why aren't they better? That it feels like, a Dan Duquette kind of team or, some of the Red Sox teams that didn't get very far in the postseason in the last 10 years or so didn't quite get over the hump to get into the playoffs. Whereas if you look at the Red Sox, and this is especially true in the most recent time they played the Yankees, they looked just more well-rounded and versatile and athletic than who they're playing against. The Yankees were a plodding home run or nothing team without enough depth on the pitching staff. And the Red Sox were a team that was always taking the extra base, making the right throw from the outfield to cut down a runner. Doing all these little things that winning teams do. And nobody really saw it coming this year. Even the most optimistic people like I was. But I think everybody's completely bought in now. They should, too. This is the real thing.
Who's your most valuable player for the first half?
I'd probably go Bogaerts, although I think Devers would win probably a poll on that. Bogaerts is just, he's a rock to lean on. And one of the things that got overlooked coming into the season after the most, it was a miserable season if you were actually paying attention last year. The Red Sox are fortunate that it was 60 games and nobody was really keeping an eye on them because it was just that dismal. But we tended to overlook that they actually have some really high-end talent. That the Bogarts is the building block for any team. That Devers had a chance to be one of the best hitters in the American League. That J.D. Martinez could bounce back and be a menace at the plate again. And those things got tucked aside because everything else about the team was so miserable. But we were reminded pretty early that they have at least three really high-end hitters, plus guys like Verdugo, Christian Vasquez, good all-around players. And I think all of that was sort of overlooked. But to me, Devers is a joy to watch every day. He reminds me a little bit of Adrian Beltre with his mannerisms and things like that. Mm. But I don't think the Red Sox are where they are without having Xander Bogaerts to just depend on at shortstop day after day after day.
I love the deal that they worked out to extend Matt Barnes' contract. That seems like a pretty good bargain.
Yeah, I think it's good for everybody, isn't it? If he doesn't remain the closer, and I saw Buster Olney speculating today that the Red Sox might trade for Craig Kimbrell, which I think is a horrendous idea.
Oh, I don't want to watch that again. I'm just getting over my ulcer from last time.
Well, at least Chris Sale's coming back to close out the World Series if they need him. Kimbrell didn't get it done last time. Another proof that Alex Cora is a really bright manager. He didn't run him out there in that situation, even though it was, it's his quote-unquote role. But, it's good money for a guy if he's the setup guy at some point a year or two down the road and he doesn't stay in the closer role. And if he's the closer, he's pitching like he has, especially at the beginning of the season, it's an absolute steal for the Red Sox. And I think the bigger part of this is they're showing willingness to keep a homegrown guy and to negotiate the contract during the season and avoid free agency altogether there. I mean, Barnes has been in the organization for 10 years now. He was part of that 2011 draft class that my colleague Alex Spear wrote about. And, first-round draft pick and a guy who's done everything that they could have asked of him in terms of conducting himself as a major leaguer and being a kind of a role model for younger pitchers in the organization now. So it's nice to see a guy who's been with the organization so long and is having a tremendous year not have to worry a little bit about the pending free agency and to know he's set up pretty well. And it's a good deal for the Red Sox, too.
Now, I don't follow California high school players the way I should, but from everything I read, it sounds like the Sox did pretty well for themselves with the fourth overall pick in the draft.
Well, New England's apparently a baseball hotbed now, so we're all focused up here. How can we pay attention to California with all these New England kids getting
right?
But it's pretty cool to see. But, yeah, I mean, I know Red Sox fans wanted Jack Leiter because the lights out college pitcher. His dad's really well known and had a tremendous major league career and still prominent on an MLB network and seemed like somebody who would get to the majors fast and put an end to this pitching drought that the Red Sox have had in terms of developing starters. They haven't really developed one since Clay Buchholz in 2007, so it's been way too long. But what happened was they ended up with the consensus best prospect in the draft with the number four pick, and you can't argue with that. You got to feel great about that, even if you had your eyes on somebody else that you probably even haven't watched pitch beyond maybe once or twice. So the Red Sox organization is deeper, and that their prospect pool is much, much richer today just with that good fortune of getting Marcel Meyer number four. And he gets Corey Seager comps, and Corey Seager was World Series MVP last year and just a tremendous all-around player. If he ends up being Corey Seager, this is a great draft for the Red Sox already.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. So I'm having fun watching baseball again. I might even watch the Home Run Derby tonight, which I haven't seen since Chris Berman was in his prime. All of this leads me to believe that because I care about baseball again, that Rob Manfred and the union will screw this up and will somehow have a labor situation next year and lose out on baseball.
Yeah, I heard somebody on the radio, one of the prominent baseball reporters, Buster or Tim Kirchen or somebody, Jeff Passan maybe mentioned in passing that if we have a season next year, and that hasn't even crossed my mind, but it's entirely possible that baseball, after dealing with the pandemic like everybody else and coming back and having this pretty incredible season where Shohei Ohtani's doing things we've never seen before, a lot of great young stars. It's too bad Ronald Acuna got hurt, but Fernando Tatis is the brightest star as there is. And just the game feels like it's in really good shape in spite of itself. for them to have a labor issue, I mean, it would be pretty devastating and just kind of show how ignorant they are, both sides, to what the standing is with this game with sports fans right now. It's tenuous, and they should be in a great spot, but if they mess this up and walk out for a little while, I don't think it's going to be too hard for sports fans to forget about them, and I hope they realize that.
Ellis Burks was one of my favorite players with the Red Sox, and I so wanted him to be good in an analyst role, I don't know. He got better as he went along, and I guess he'll be back sometime in August. But every great player just is not cut out to do that sort of thing, I guess.
Yeah, he's got a couple things working against him. Doing road games from a studio, as John Sterling showed us with saw the replay of the Aaron Judge home run. It's a challenge. He was working with Mike Monaco rather than Dave O'Brien. Mike Monaco's a fill-in. Down a kid does the Paw Sox games, but he's not exactly coming in with somebody who's that comfortable in the situation either. And Ellis is just a really nice guy who still has that mentality of not wanting to say anything negative about players. I talked to him, I did a story on him after he took this gig before the season, and he said he's a truth teller who's going to really be able to cut to the chase and say what he thinks. And I think he's been a little bit more hesitant in that than he thought. I thought he was good in the studio, especially when he's with Jim Rice, who's been a friend and mentor to him for a long time. But the studio and the broadcast booth needs a little bit of work. I wouldn't bet against him because he's such a hard worker and a smart guy, but a little bit of a slow start here. Might need more time at AAA before you call him up again.
It has been great, as it always is, to hear Sean McDonough doing Red Sox games on the radio, and a great opportunity for the rest of the country, if they don't know, to see how incredibly versatile he is with this new ESPN hockey gig.
Yeah, what hasn't he done? I did a story on him last week, and I should have asked him that. I didn't think to, but he's called pretty much every prominent sport that there is. He's done Monday Night Football and did NFL games, CBS, some radio, and golf, tennis. We remember him calling the World Series at a very young age, calling the Francisco Cabrera hit to put the Braves in the World Series, and just so many memorable things along the way. It was easy to overlook that he's got a pretty strong hockey background too.
Right.
When he was first starting out, he called Hockey East teams on NESN. He was a periods host on Bruins games for Channel 38, and has called the Olympics. I think it was Nagano in 98, was the first year that they had women's hockey, and the first year that the NHL players were playing for the U.S. team, so entirely made up of NHL players. So he has a deep hockey background, too, but he's done so many things since and does these Red Sox games basically for fun that it was easy to overlook that. He's going to be great at this job. And I've heard, too, that there's still a possibility that Gary Thorne ends up doing some games, which is tremendous news for UMaine fans and Mainers and ESPN. People remember ESPN hockey from back in the day when he was the voice of that there.
Yeah, we talked to Gary back right before the baseball season started. And he was taking care of his horses on his farm out in California, and said he'd be happy to do something, but it sounded like the grind of traveling, he was not crazy about going back on the road for 30 weeks a year or anything like that.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to work out some select things for him, kind of like what Sean does with the Red Sox, sort of pick what you want to do. I know Mark Gross is the executive ESPN in charge of the hiring sphere, and I didn't talk to him, but I've talked to him at length in the past, and he mentioned, I think, to a Pittsburgh reporter that they're still hoping to work things out with Gary and kind of maybe to give him what he wants to do, if it's a game here or there or whatever, sort of an emeritus role. So I imagine if that ends up happening, that would get about 100% approval from hockey fans.
Oh, yeah.
On ESPN.
No question about that. You've written about it, Chad. This whole Rachel Nichols situation is just so bizarre and so seemingly out of character for her.
It is, yeah. I've dealt with her probably going back 8 or 9 years. First when she was at TBS, and She's as nice a person as I've ever seen from somebody with a high profile. Just off-camera stuff, going out of her way to, you know, engage a writer from the Press Herald or, you know, somebody like me from the Globe, didn't even know at that time, and just kind of talking about what's going on in the press room and kind of like being the host of a show in the press box, you know, just engaging everybody who wants to talk about something. And so that was a little bit surprising to hear her say that, even though, you know, she didn't know she was being recorded. But my bigger takeaway from that whole situation is that ESPN had a year to fix this.
Right.
They had a year to remedy it. That thing was recorded in a bubble last July 2020. And they tried to mend fences between her and Maria Taylor, but not enough to the point where they got to the tipping point there right now where Maria's contract is up. There's a possibility she just wouldn't work the finals in protest. And as poorly handled situation as you could possibly imagine. And the New York Times dug into it a little bit more, and it turned into this big epic thing that ESPN should have foreseen coming, and they didn't. And you know, had to do a lot of damage control, and I still don't think everything is repaired there. So pretty bad look for ESPN management, for sure.
That's for sure. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Boston.com, with us here on Downtown. Chad, appreciate it as always. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll check in with you again before too long.
Thanks, Rich. Always good talking to you, man.
Chad Finn on Downtown.